Thanks for tuning in to High on Horror. I'm Drew.
And I'm John. This episode and every future episode is dedicated to all the horror hounds and smokers out there who want to expand their knowledge of the genre and have a good time.
Today we're reviewing the film that everyone is talking about, Late Night with the Devil, which is continuing to break streaming records on Shudder. It's the most watched and biggest acquisition-driving film of all time on both AMC Plus and Shudder. This, of course, after having the biggest opening weekend of all time for an IFC film during its brief theatrical run. This movie is right up our alley. If you like films that take place during the Satanic Panic time, then this one's for you. We can't wait to talk about it today on
High on Horror.
Interviews, reviews, and the latest news all rolled into one. Now it's time for Strain Wreck, the segment of our show where we discuss what strain we're getting wrecked on. You know, we always like to start off each episode this way, especially when it's a movie that we are looking forward to talking about. So, John, I know you got something good for us today. I'm hoping, I'm praying.
Always. I got a 24% THC.
Oh.
Fat banana. It's a hybrid strain made by Cross and OG Kush, which I'm already a fan of.
Right, same.
And this is an actual strain named Chiquita Banana.
Oh, shit. That's an actual strain. Okay. Yeah.
You can expect this strain to taste sweet and citrusy alongside an aroma that's reminiscent of bananas. I don't know. I feel like they make that shit up again. Like we've talked about, I don't think it's going to smell like bananas. It's going to smell like weed.
I highly doubt I'm going to taste bananas.
It's going to smell like burnt weed.
If it was a vape, I'd taste banana. But, that's true. You know, the weed, nah.
Fat banana effects start off mildly euphoric and calming before turning into a deep physical high. Man, I might have to stay tonight here.
Deep physical high.
This strain is known to cause the munchies. I mean, I feel like every strain is known to cause the munchies.
Let's be real, you're going to hit Wawa on the way home after here anyway. So,
Talkative, giggly, and happy are the feelings. Negatives are headache, dry eyes, and oh, it's back, dry mouth. Flavors are tropical, honey, and mango. So not once banana, but you told me in the description banana's one of the
right
things. Okay, Leafly.
Did you find any reviews?
I did. Last week I forgot to bring that up, and I was trying to scour them when we were going over it. Wasn't anything too great, but this one did make me laugh a little bit.
Okay.
It said, this is a solid strain. It tastes like bananas and dirt. LOL. That's what got me. It's really amazing how much banana flavor this strain can pack. It makes up for the earthy dirt flavor that the aftertaste can have, especially towards the end of a bowl. It's a good stony high, but it won't knock you out, so it's a good weed for socializing, listening to music, and chilling. It can get kind of headachy if you smoke too much, but luckily a little goes a long way. Well, we got a cone packed up.
Be prepared for a headache. Before we get talking about...
I even grab a lighter.
I got you. I got all right. You. Let's see.
I don't know. Yep, I left mine in the car. Save the day.
Well, before we get to talking about Late Night with the Devil, I wanted to bring up some awesome news that I wanted to talk about while we indulge in the devil's lettuce. According to multiple horror media outlets, there's not one but two new Evil Dead movies in the works. One is by Sebastian Vanek, I hope I'm saying that right, who directed Infested, about giant spiders taking over an apartment complex. It's very, very good. I just watched it on Shudder this weekend. Very good. We might have to review
that
one.
Yeah,
we might have to review it. It's not a cheesy monster movie like with B-movie spiders. It's very different and realistic. I enjoyed it. And there's another Evil Dead movie, yes, a second one in the works, as I mentioned, with Francis Galoppi writing and directing. Now, Francis is known for his crime thriller, The Last Stop in Yuma County, which I have not seen, but I'm going to make it a priority to see now. But yeah, I'm smiling. The Evil Dead movies are always something to be happy about. I'm sorry, new Evil Dead movies, rather, are always something to be happy about. Am I right?
Yeah, and I mean, given the Evil Dead rise, I mean...
It's so
like
fucking good, dude.
I feel like we had a really, really solid movie without Bruce. So we don't need Ash to carry the franchise.
Agreed. And you know, with me, it's always been Halloween and Evil Dead. Those have always been the two big ones. And I've always said Evil Dead is an untapped market, man. Every time a new Evil Dead project pops up, think about it. The 2013 reboot, Ash vs. Evil Dead, Evil Dead Rise, it all does well. They should have been pumping Evil Dead movies out like this from the start. I'm psyched that they're finally jumping on board.
Yeah, but do you want it to turn into some of them Halloween movies if they were just pumping out their movies?
Fair enough, but I guess the fact that there's so few keeps it, you know, it probably is if we were looking at what there only being, what, 5 Evil Dead movies, including a reboot and Evil Dead Rise, they probably have the most consistent track record if you were going to review them all versus, like, reviewing the first, like, 7 Halloween movies or the 7 Friday the 13th movies.
And the difference is you have Bruce and Sam involved in most of them. Well, they have their hand in it still.
Even if the pun intended, their hand, their one hand. But
I didn't even do that on purpose.
By the way, I'm not tasting banana, but it
do you
is,
taste
it's,
dirt?
It's no, but it's smooth. I'll say it's a smooth smoke. But you have something that you wanted to bring to my attention. I hear.
Yeah, shit. Where are my notes? Oh, there they are. Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story, is going to be brought to VHS from Lunch Meat. They're only going to make 30 VHS tapes, but it's good to see Robert Englund getting his story told.
No, that is cool. So, that is actually on Blu-ray, and it's on Shudder, I believe, but this is a VHS release, which is that's pretty cool.
And according to Bloody Disgusting, Jessica Roth was talking to Screen Geek, and she brought up Happy Death Day 3.
Okay.
She said director Chris Landon has it all figured out already, and they're just waiting on Blumhouse to give them the okay to make it. And 4 years ago, Chris Landon actually said that he had the movie done. It was going to be different than the other two, which I think you need for the third one.
Correct.
That was the problem with the second one. I enjoyed the first one.
Same. I enjoyed the second one, too, but like you said, it's a little bit more of the same.
If they made Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And then made Groundhog Day 2 and just made Groundhog Day Groundhog Day.
Well said.
I mean, and it's in the same vein. That's what Happy Death Day is, the horror version of Groundhog Day. But he also said the title would be Happy Death Day to Us.
Okay.
So would you want to see a third Happy Death Day
movie? I'm down. I actually, to be honest with you, if I'm being totally honest, I thought that there already was a third. I thought I was one behind. I'm kind of out of touch. After I'd seen the second one, I kind of fell off from it. I liked 1 and 2 enough to say that I'd give a third one a chance for sure. Nothing tells me to not watch it. I don't hate them or dislike them enough to not want to watch it. I'm not going to rush to the theater.
And especially if it's going to be different than the other ones.
Right. But I'm sure, dude, Blumhouse is fucking killing it right now. I don't know if you know this or not, but Megan is one of the most profitable films of all time. But with how much it made versus what it was made on, it's one of the most profitable films of all time. He's joined forces with James Wan. They're fucking killing it right now. I am absolutely sure. He'll do fucking... Jason Blum's going to do fucking 5 Death Days, Happy Death Days, if he can. Like, he is not scared to pump horror out at all. So I do respect him for that.
I guess James Wan didn't make the movie, but... I was thinking of Night Swim was not that good.
That's the thing where people are just using his name to just get the movie by. But unfortunately, his name shouldn't be on that movie. Don't be fooled.
I mean, it is a Blumhouse production, so I mean. But other than that, they've done good. Halloween Ends. But
yeah.
Overall, things are good.
Well, on to the topic of today's episode: the Cairns brothers, Colin and Cameron, Australian natives, unleash hell onto your television set in Late Night with the Devil. Let's talk about it. I liked that we had the same idea, John. I was going to write up a backstory of The Grove because it's real, and if you look it up, it will take you down a fucking rabbit hole.
If you like conspiracy theories, check it out.
And I saw that you had already planned on bringing it up and had some notes ready.
That was like the first thing I started writing in my notes because, I mean, they talk about The Grove, like, what, the first 10 seconds into the movie, one quick thing, does everybody need their logo? After one point I was like, okay, it's gonna start, all right, one, okay, one more. I looked at the time and it was like 2.5 minutes of just like different company logos.
Yep. Well, that's what that is. Is that's because like to even though it's an indie movie, and it's from, I believe, Australian, U.S. and Iran, all from, it's like made from all three different countries. Or that's something along those lines, where all three countries had their fingers involved in making it. So a lot of different film companies. Yeah, I agree. A lot of different companies breaking up the cost of the movie and shit like that to get it made. So yeah, it was like a good minute or two of just film after film, company after company.
Yeah, right. Well, let's get into the backstory here. All right, so The Grove here, the movie starts and they talk about The Grove, and this is based off of Bohemian Grove, which is a private club. And mid-July each year, they host a two-week encampment of some of the most wealthy and prominent men in the world. The club venerates John of Nepomuk as its patron saint. He was a figure that was chosen, is reputed to have chosen martyrdom over revealing the confessions of a queen to a Bohemian monarch. So they have a huge wooden sculpture of St. John. He's depicted in clerical garb with a hushed gesture. He stands sentinel by the lake in the grove, and that's supposed to be emblematic of the discretion upheld by its attendees across generations. And since its inception, Bohemian Grove has adopted an owl as its emblem, which we end up seeing in the movie, representing wisdom, and it stands over 30 feet tall. It's a hollow owl statue. It's crafted from concrete atop steel supports, and it's over the lake's edge. And it was envisioned by the sculptor and a former club president, Haig Patigan, and was erected in the late 1920s. Since 1929, it served as the focal point of the annual cremation of care ceremony, which we'll get into a little bit more about that here in a minute. The ceremony dates back to 1881, and select members partake as performers. Originally, James F. Bowman with George T. Bromley. I don't know any of these people.
Me neither.
They were The prominent people of the 1920s, they were your Taylor Swifts of the time. lost my spot here for a second. They assumed the role of the high priest, and it initially unfolded as part of the hijinks theatrical tradition during the encampment's first weekend. And it marks the liberation of spirits and the club's commitment to environmental stewardship. In 1913, it was separated from other Grove plays and became a ritual on opening night intended to ensure the success of ensuing activities. And it's set against the backdrop of the Owl Shrine. The moss-covered statue, they actually use that to conceal electrical and audio stuff. Makes it look more naturalistic.
Okay.
For years, the voice of the esteemed club member, Walter Cronkite, for you kids out there that might not know Walter Cronkite, he was the only newsman on TV back in the black and white days. He resonated as the owl during the ceremony, and that helped add like a distinguished aura to the proceedings. They've had four honorary female members. None have ever been full members, and they haven't had any since 1928. And it's protected by a security team year-round. They use ex-military personnel to help secure the area. They use high-end security equipment, thermal night vision cameras, motion detector, vibration alarms. And when members are on site, they have local sheriff's offices, California Highway Patrol. And depending on who the guests may be, they even sometimes have the United States Secret Service helping to secure the area. Things like this have led to stories of satanistic activities occurring and things of the occult. And that was especially true after July 15th, 2000. Alex Jones and his cameraman, Mike Hansen, were able to enter into Bohemian Grove and shot footage of the cremation of care ceremony. Jones claims it was a ritual sacrifice. And from the same footage, documentary filmmaker John Ronson produced the episode The Satanic Shadowy Elite? So they're not saying they are. They're just, hey, are they? That question mark's important, I think. In which he characterizes the proceedings as an overgrown frat party, while Jones stuck to the satanic and produced dark secrets inside Bohemian Grove. All right, since this is a newer film, we'll try to avoid spoilers best as we can, but you know how we always be struggling. Late Night with the Devil stars David Dastmalchian as Jack Delroy. He is the host of Night Owls. His main rival is Johnny Carson. Drew, were you ever a watcher of the late night shows?
Yeah, I watched some Craig Ferguson.
Yeah, he good. He good.
And some Jay Leno. And I forget who the other one was, but I never really like stuck to it. It was just kind of like if it was on and I was asleep. I usually had the volume turned down, but from what I could tell, I usually laughed at Craig Ferguson, but I wouldn't say I was a late night show person.
Craig Ferguson kind of did that like dumb humor stuff that would make me laugh. He had that Robot Jeff.
Yes, yeah, totally.
And was it the horse? He would go over and talk to the horse.
Yep.
But I remember very early on, he wasn't around much when, because I was born in 86. I think he retired in 92, but my parents loved Johnny Carson, so
damn.
I remember some of those. I was a big Letterman guy. I always thought he was funny.
So, yeah, so you caught some of Johnny Carson during his last years on air, right? Nice, nice.
And then David Letterman on Friday nights, he would do Will It Float? And my dad just thought that was like the dumbest thing to watch. He didn't get why I thought it was funny. And I enjoy the dry humor. Like, I mean, they would legitimately like have it and they would talk about buoyancy and they would argue with each other sometimes about stuff like, and he was just like, this is so stupid.
So what was the premise? They would just find random shit to
make. They had like a giant like dunk tank. Okay. Like you would like put somebody in and throw a ball at, and they would just go to the top. They would have one of the stagehands go to the top and just drop it in the water and see if it floated. And you had women with like power sanders on like, they had like metal like breastplates and just be making sparks. It was fucking stupid. Like one was like dancing with hula hoops.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like something right up your
and,
alley.
And Conan O'Brien was pretty good.
Okay, I've heard good things about Conan.
I was not a big Leno fan. And the ones now I can't stand. But anyway, the movie starts and it talks about Jack going to the Grove. It talks a little bit about the history of the Grove. And when he first starts Night Owls, his wife Madeline is his co-host, played by Georgina Haig. She later dies of cancer. This is not as big of a spoiler as you think. It happens, in the first 5-10 minutes of the film?
Probably fucking first minute.
Yeah,
I mean, 30 seconds. Once you get past those film companies.
Yeah, all the film companies, and then like the little like mini biography.
Yeah, yeah, probably within the first minute or so it's said. It's just, yeah.
And Jack goes into a depression, as most people would. Jack eventually returns to the show, but the ratings just aren't there. So in order to boost ratings, he has a special Halloween episode with Christal, a medium and a psychic, Carmichael Haig, a magician and skeptic, and Dr. June Ross Mitchell, who's a parapsychologist, and she has her latest subject, Lily Diabo, with her. And June's book is called Conversations with the Devil, and it's all about Lily. Lily was the sole survivor of a mass suicide from a cult who worships Abraxas. I actually looked that up, and apparently Abraxas has a lot of meanings in different cultures. But the description of him in the Infernal Dictionary describes him as having a rooster's head, dragon's feet, and a whip in his hand.
He's ugly, motherfucker.
And a king's head and snakes in lieu of feet. Some believe the term abracadabra comes from Abraxas.
Yeah, they mentioned that in the movie, actually. They say that briefly.
And Jack keeps pushing to conjure the demon, despite warnings from June warning him against it. I think that would be a good place to drop off from the story, because that's when shit starts really picking up.
And if you read the synopsis of the story or have read the trailer, you pretty much know what's yet to come that we haven't talked about, minus the spoiler. So yeah, I think I agree. It's a good time to stop.
Yeah, and I guess I'll start here with my rating. We've been trying to get our hands on this forever, from covering the Fantasia Film Festival to the Toronto After Dark Film Festival. We tried getting screeners for it. We've wanted to see it.
Yeah, we've reached out everywhere.
Yeah, and I mean, since we read the synopsis of it, we're like, yeah, that's one of the ones we want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, everyone around me's heard nothing but good things, but personally, everything I saw online trashed the film. So I was a little apprehensive coming into the film, and before I get into my feelings, I want to address the AI art in the film, because this has like become such a big deal.
I know.
I don't get the hate. It's three still images. And
they look cool.
And no one's, and no one's job was taken. I mean, if anything, it helps the art department. I was talking with somebody about it. Like, this takes stuff off the art department's hands that they can go and do other stuff. And it was further edited after being generated. So they had AI generate it, but then they still edit it themselves.
Right.
And that's using AI as a tool, and I think that's exactly how it should be used.
Agreed.
But
at the end of the day, if your biggest critique from people watching your movie is that you use AI to create some three we'll be back still images, then, I mean, you did an okay job.
Yeah, anyway, getting back into the actual film here. Remember when last week I said Night Swim was some of the worst of the Possession and Supernatural film?
Yes.
This has got to be the polar opposite. Desmalchian, he feels like a gimmicky late night host from that era. Also, it's top tier found footage film. You honestly forget you're watching a found footage film because of the high production value of a TV show. So it's I feel like it's almost in a way kind of like a loophole. Like, hey, it's found footage, but it's perfect footage because it was being filmed at a TV studio.
Correct. It's not found footage because it was recorded on your phone or your camcorder. It's found footage because it's footage that was lost.
It's impressive how much of the 70s TV feel they got right in this film. The film's never truly scary, but it's atmospheric for sure. I absolutely love it. Even the ending, which is seemed to be a dividing point for people, I was fine with that. I've watched this a couple times already. I give it a 9.3 out of 10. Roll a fat blunt of some indica and just sink in the couch and watch this one. Last thing before I turn it over to you, Jack and Jill went up a hill to fuck each other's brains out. Dude, that shit was stuck in my head after watching it a couple times. Like,
all right, so look, I love this movie. I watched it 3 times in 2 days. I told you that. I was like, dude, I've already watched it 3 times.
You got me beat. I only watched it 2 times in 3 days, I think.
Well, yeah, but it was everything to me that I wanted it to be. David Desmalchian is awesome and carries the movie with ease, man. He needs to be the star of movies more often. He needs to have more movies like this on his shoulders and be in front of the camera more. He's grown up from being
sweaty in Dark Knight.
I know, it's crazy when you think that the Dark Knight was like his first movie, right? Nolan picked him up and just put him in as a schizophrenic. If it's not
his first movie, it's one of his first few movies.
He's on Dune. He's done Oppenheimer. You know, I mean, the dude's he's kind of just dropped in and just started really making a name for himself and doing good shit. But
Perseverance.
I thought, yeah, all the acting was well done in the movie. Laura Gordon, who plays Dr. June, does a great job of making you sympathetic by adding that realism and seriousness to the scenes she's in when everyone else is kind of taking it lightly. She's like the one that's like, she's the viewer. She's the one that's like, nah, don't fuck with this. And everyone else is the ones playing around. Ingrid Torelli. Well,
we're sitting there watching, go fuck with it.
Ingrid Torelli, who played Lily the Possessed Girl. It's funny because Ingrid said that they filmed the exorcism scene in one day with many, many takes, and after a while, it makes you go mad, and she used that in her performance, and it shows. And the exorcism scene is creepy as shit. And add to that real quick that David said he actually witnessed Ingrid getting ready for filming in front of a mirror, and the way that she was acting and her facial expressions like truly deeply disturbed him. So well job done by Ingrid. And besides that, I love the look and feel of the movie and the atmosphere. It's quirky for the most part, but, you know, shit can turn around quick. So despite the humor, I could not relax during watching it the first time because I just knew some shit was coming. The hypnotism scene is probably my favorite scene. I love the gross visuals, body horror. Again, no spoilers, just
some Cronenberg.
The practical effects are awesome. I was just having a blast watching this movie. However, I can't help but compare the movie to Ghostwatch, which is very close in plot. And Ghostwatch is better. The authenticity of Ghostwatch is still unmatched. And at the end of the day, if you walked in on someone watching Ghostwatch, you're going to think they're watching an old TV program. If you walk in on someone watching Late Night with the Devil, you're going to know it's a movie.
I don't know. I agree with that.
Well, it is a movie, though. And some people argue that Ghostwatch was a real TV program and that, you know, this is a movie, so it's not fair to compare. But I say to you, to those of you who think that, go watch the WNUF Halloween special, because that's a movie, and it's of a news show that takes place on Halloween night during Satanic Panic, and it also captures a more authentic look and feel. But I don't need to compare movies when I happily enjoy all of them. I think they're all awesome. I just, part of me always, like, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, I wasn't a talk show guy, so maybe there's a part of me that's missing the authenticity. I'm not saying it doesn't look authentic. I'm just saying that, like, to me, like you said, maybe you disagree. I feel like someone walking in would know it's a movie.
I could agree, but, because everybody knows David S. Malchin's mug. Like,
that's fair. That's fair.
I'll give you that, because, like, even if you, it's one of those ones where you're like, even if I haven't seen his movies, he just has a memorable face.
Yeah, I feel that. You know what? Maybe if it was someone else, it would be different. But I absolutely loved Late Night with the Devil and everything about it. The switcheroo ending made me gasp. 9.5 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I don't.
That's as good as we can go without going into spoilers, which hopefully we can revisit this and go in depth. Well,
we'll probably talk about spoilers once we're done recording.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
you know, I was going to say, this is, I mean, it ain't going to get much higher on our rankings, because I don't think there'll ever be a movie that comes out since we've reviewed that will make us give it a 10. So,
yeah, I agree.
I feel like we would give Halloween a 10 just to give it a 10. Like, you could argue that there should be some points knocked off for a couple things, or like points taken off.
I agree.
But I'm just going to argue 10 every time. I found another way to bring Halloween into this. And speaking of that, I did not do this on purpose to make a segue. A new Halloween movie takes place on Halloween.
Yep, that's true. Yeah, another new Halloween movie. I'm sure with this being a Shudder original, it won't be one of the ones that drops off, so we'll be able to revisit it. But this would be one that would be really cool to own.
I don't know if it will, but I'm hoping we get this on the last drive-in.
Dude, that'd be crazy. That would be awesome.
Get
David on with Joe Bob. Fuck yeah.
Yeah,
so David seems like a really cool guy, too. I'd like to talk to him, so hopefully reach out.
You got to keep the AC on, or he's going to be sweating.
Swift from The Dark Knight. I'll never forget, all you out there listening.
Meet Swift.
That, you know, this guy's, like, first role was Harvey Dent nearly killing him in the alleyway, and Christian Bale Batman saving his ass, you know, and he's a schizophrenic.
Oh, and we found a way to rework it back in Dark Knight.
Yes, we did.
All right, let's wrap this up. Thanks to all the horror hounds and smokers out there for tuning in. I think this is just an ongoing gag that we're going to say next week we're reviewing Exorcist Believer.
But we actually are, right? This time? Are we serious this time?
Maybe.
We'll see.
I don't know, because we were supposed to review both, and I was like, damn, I really want to talk about this film. This was really good. Anyway, so, you know, you follow us on social media, you'll find out. High on Horror420 on Instagram, X, Facebook. Everything.
Yeah, we don't have an OnlyFans yet. If you listen to the show, we bring it up all the time.
You're going to have to use a wide angle lens. You know what? I stole that from 89 Batman Knox.
That was
He was like, oh, if you're going to need me, you're going to need extra long. Anyway, email us high on horror420 for that PPA questions, highonhorror.com. Check out the website. I guess that about wrap her up. Catch you later.
I was joking about the OnlyFans. See y'all next week.